Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Fighting Words on the Fighting Words News Network. Fighting Words is brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women police and fire services, first responders and doctors and nurses at the hospitals for first line COVID, especially the people that have to clean up after them, and those who are keeping the shelves stocked and keeping our stores open. Fighting Words has a new sponsor. It's BioSolar. You can get a hold of Patrick, at 727-314-6976. You can lease solar panels and no money down, except your FPNL bill by permanently for 25%. They go all over the country. They're licensed all over the country. So if you need to get some solar panel prices, give Patrick and the guys a call at 727-314-6978. There's also a $200 rebate if you call within and tell them you're calling from Fighting Words. Well, guys, I'm glad everybody's back. We got the whole crew here tonight: Ty, Zito, Caden, Bob, myself. So let's. And we got a lot to talk about. Bob, what about, tell me about Sean O'Malley and Ruan Poufas with a TKO.
I'll be 100% honest with you. I haven't watched a fight in 3 weeks, brother. So I have no idea. I've been enjoying family time and Christmas and the holidays. So I had to meet up with somebody else.
Yeah, I watched that fight. It's just like every other Sean O'Malley performance. He goes out there, he outskills every opponent he faces. I mean, I can't wait till he faces an actual worthy opponent, you know, someone maybe in the top 10. So I do want him to get a title shot the next 2 years here, and he's not going to do that if he doesn't, you know, start fighting guys that are at least, you know, top 10, top 5, you know. And he hasn't been doing that, which has kind of been making me a little, you know, antsy about his whole career and stuff like that. You know, he's been doing it for a long time, and he's been good for a long time as well. And he hasn't even gotten top five yet.
All right. How about Charles Oliveira and the Dustin Poirier fight? That was a really tough fight.
That was a tough fight, and I was wrong about a lot of fights last year. I honestly felt that Amanda Nunes was the best pound for pound on the planet. I remember saying that. so I kind of want to retract my statement.
Hey, at least you're learning. Would you like to enlighten our fans about how you spent your afternoon?
Yeah, it was I went and I met Mike Tyson. It was pretty fun.
Mm-hmm. And what else? Who else did you meet?
Sammy Scaff. Sammy Scaff, yeah.
Yeah. Probably the only people that remember Sammy Scaff would be Ty and Zito and myself. Ty, you got anything on that?
No, actually, I don't remember Sammy Scaff.
He fought Tyson back in the very early part of his career. Just took him right out.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, Tyson was taking everybody out on his come up.
Yeah.
So. But kudos, man. I'm glad you had a fantastic day, it seems.
Thank you.
I guess, Bob, what do you think about Adesanya and Whitaker coming out after a layoff with the UFC 271?
Matching them up, I mean, Whitaker's a bad guy or a bad boy, but Adesanya is just on another level. Are they doing a crossover?
Yes.
I haven't heard about that.
Yeah.
Yes, they're doing the rematch. The rematch is coming up. Since, if you remember, Whitaker was knocked out by Adesanya.
Yeah.
But since that point, he's proven himself the clear number two in the division. With victories over Gastelum, he's also beaten Darren Till. He's beaten Jared Cannonier. So, you know, he's the clear number two in the division. So the rematch is coming up just a couple weeks out.
Mm-hmm. February 5th. Yes. Ty, what do you think of Joseph Parker? It took him 12 rounds to get over his last fight with Chisora. Do you think that was it seemed to be drag out for me? I thought he'd be out
early.
Well, I
thought it was a good fight. Yeah, well, you know, it looked like he was going to get Chisora out of there a couple times. He dropped him hard.
Yeah.
Not flash knockdown. Right. He dropped him hard three times. But at the same time, you got to give Chisora all the credit in the world for his recuperative ability and also for his guile and his cleverness to go ahead and finagle his way out of trouble in those situations, even more than anything. Actually, that was one of Parker's better performance that I've seen in quite some time. He fought with more passion. He stood his ground a little bit more. He didn't look as contact averse as usual. And with that said, Chisora was older. You know, I thought he would lose. He was just going to be older going into the rematch, whereas Parker's still only 29. So I figured Chisora would lose. But Parker did, to me, impress just from the way he had been fighting recently in that performance.
Okay. Z?
Yeah, I have to agree with Ty. Parker, he showed a mean streak. And and to be honest, as mean as his streak was, if it was, I think, you know, if it was any of the other top guys, they would have finished it. But for Parker, that was good. It was good that he stood his ground and he grew with mean intention. He was a bit more offensive-minded. And that it benefited him. Just because when you have a guy that aggressive and strong and aggressive like that, you're going to have to make a mistake. I mean, you can't go through rounds of a guy like Chisora and not have him respect you. I mean, because what's going to end up happening is the first fight. He's going to, I mean, for goodness sake, him and Usyk has to sort of, you know what I mean, not be dealing with Chisora. So I mean, you have, I mean, I'm impressed with Parker. I mean, but at the same time, that's an older Chisora. And, you know, who's to say that he have that same streak if he fights like a Dillon White again? I mean, that's yet to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the second time seeing Chisora. And usually after the first time, you get over that fear to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, that's a very good point about it being the second time because, you know, Joseph Parker can and did adjust, whereas, you know, Chisora is going to bring the same skill set, the same game plan every single fight. You know what he's going to do. He's not going to adjust. He's just going to get older, whereas you can get a little bit better. And that's what Parker did. That's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Z?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I agree. Parker, he met, I don't want to say he met force with force, but he met the aggression properly to where he came with his own aggression. And sometimes your best defense can be, you know, a good, steady, consistent, hard offense.
Okay.
Well, Z, let me ask you that. Parker better than
Marcus Brown in the ninth with a really hard liver shot. Did you ever see the fight?
Oh, yeah. I saw the fight, man. It was an interesting fight to me because I thought Better Beard was down on the court.
Mm-hmm.
With that said, it seemed like after he got cut, it was a sense of emergency where he stepped on the gas pedal and Marcus Brown just kind of couldn't take what was given. And I think the liver shot was more of a culmination of what was happening and what was to come, which was a liver shot. But with that said, Marcus Brown put up a wonderful, wonderful performance up until a certain degree.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let me ask you another question then, and this is can it happen? Caleb Plant is calling out Jamal Charlo. One, do you think it will ever happen? Two, what do you think the outcome will be?
It could potentially happen, absolutely. But I think Charlo's going to have to move up to 168. I mean, or else they're going to have. I mean, I don't really see any sort of catch weight, but I do see Charlo can move up. I absolutely believe that. With that said, it's something to be said because usually guys move up. Unless you really have confidence in them, you don't want them taking on the most you know, the top guys in the division when they move up. Not all the time, but in boxing, that's often what happens. But, you know, you want a guy to take a tune-up or you know, take a fight to feel the weight. To feel the weight at the, in the fight. You want to feel that. And, you know, that, as I said, I can't, you know, Kevin Plant's not old, but he's a guy. I mean, Jolo, he does have a, I mean, he can win that fight. He's very physical. He hits hard. He could bag rounds, I think, to a certain degree on Plant, just being more with the contact. And Plant looking, you know, maybe the pot shot a little bit. No, he can lose rounds that way. But at the same time, I wouldn't pick Jolo over Plant, not at 168. Not now.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Katie?
About Caleb Plant?
Yeah, Caleb Plant versus Charlo.
Caleb Plant's a good fighter. I mean, I really didn't know a lot about him until he fought Canelo. Yeah, because I'm not really big into the whole boxing scene, not yet at least. I'm still doing my homework. But when he fought Canelo, I was extremely surprised the way he held up. And he was so tough in there with Canelo. And someone that can do that with him, I think he has that fight. I think he's winning that fight.
Thank you. Z, you mentioned about Charlo moving up. He's applied to the WBC for OK to move up to 165. Is that a good move for him?
Yeah, well, it depends how he feels. And I think, to me, his frame, absolutely. His frame looks to me, he could fight at 175 eventually, maybe. He's a tall, wide-shouldered guy. He hits hard. I mean, that's one thing. He hits hard for his weight, and I think that can carry up. It depends on who he fights. It all depends on who he fights. And at 160, I think at 160, he is one of the top guys. Right now, at 160, he might be the top guy to me. But at 168, that's a different obstacle. I mean, to me, you have guys like Benavidez and, as you said, Plant, even Canelo. I don't see Charlo immediately moving up to that weight and beating any one of those guys. Not immediately. I have to see him at the weight. I could be wrong, but before I even totally assess it to that point, I would have to see Charlo at that weight. How his power is, how his armor is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see what this is. About Francis Ngannou versus Cyril Gane, UFC 270. What's your thoughts on that one?
Cyril Gane is winning that fight.
Yeah.
I don't care. I think a lot of people have him coming in as not winning that fight. Me personally, I think if that fight goes the distance, Ngannou's not winning a single round. Yet Ngannou is a lot more powerful than Cyril Gane, but Cyril Gane is a more well-rounded fighter. I think he's gonna beat Ngannou in almost every aspect except for power.
Okay. Now, you'll just have to – just excuse me for just a second. Let me talk to our resident cook and Covatier. Z, do you think we should prepare a pro sandwich for that?
Ngannou and Gane? I think this much. I don't know if Gane can beat Ngannou right now. I would not be surprised if he did, but I don't know if right now he can beat him. And I agree with everything Katie said. Gane is a more well-rounded fighter. Cyril's he's a more well-rounded fighter. But under the bright lights right now, Ngannou, he's right now the best heavyweight to me. And he's won better competition. I just think that it's going to be a close fight. I don't think, you know, and Ganu's going to get, you know, a spectacular knockout. So I don't think Ganu's going to get a knockout. I just think that it's going to be a champion fight, if you get what I mean, where, you know, it, the champion edges it out. But, you know, now, and I can see them looking, you know, Gon might have won in some complaints, and maybe they set a rematch up. I don't know in a rematch. I don't know if Ngannou would beat Gon in a rematch.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, if you have games, you know, the fighter with more game tends to, they could tend to adjust a little better.
Mm-hmm.
They did
Bob,
train together. Ngannou and Gon did train together.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they were former training partners and stuff like that as well. So they've kind of got some history with each other. Also behind the scenes, like with the UFC 268 or something, exchanging some words. But yeah, I started. I just was on Amazon and ordered some extra crow. You know what I mean? Just so we can have it on hand. And then because they got solely, you know, on how poorly the UFC treated Ngannou, I want that guy to go out on top. And I think he, like Z said, the more experience in the ring. Cyril Gane is undoubtedly a fantastic striker. I think he's going to play more to the outside, kind of the boxing thing. Says he's not afraid of Ngannou's power. But I think it'll be a pretty good fight. If it does go to distance, possibly. I mean, they're both incredible strikers. So I mean, maybe points. I don't know because they will be effective over the strikes thrown. I'm gonna go with Ngannou just so we at least have somebody eating crow.
Okay.
Okay, you may be joining me, you know. How about, all right, Bob, what about Nate Diaz calling out McGregor?
Now, I didn't hear it that way. I heard that Dana White said that McGregor Diaz trilogy is potential, but Diaz has got to want that fight. I didn't hear that he stepped up to the plate with that yet.
Yeah, he has. That's what he's calling him out for that.
Nice. Well, then that'll probably take place sometime this year. I guess what are they? McGregor's saying, his coach is saying early summer for his recovery. You know, I mean, I wish him the best of luck. Break a leg.
There you go. What about your very favorite fighter, Jake Paul?
Now, as far as I know more about him this whole last holiday season than anybody else, and I'm feeling really bad about it. My wife even sent me an extra article on that guy. So if he's true to these latest, you know, he knocked out Woodley again. Woodley dropped that left hand. I mean, they say it was fixed. They say it was this, that. They say money. And I've said all of that. But I have to admit, that's how I lost my last fight before I went to retire again. I dropped my left hand and caught a right hook. It happens. You know, knocks your equilibrium out. You're out. There's no question there, but and then Jake Paul is now calling out Dana White and stuff like that as far as trying to treat how he treats fighters. Now, if he's true to that and he's really trying to get fighters more pay and some benefits and stuff like that, then Jake Paul has actually gone up one in my book. Now, if you total everything up, he's up to one. That gives him one. So he's at least made the book.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say this about Jake Paul. A lot of people say he can't box. Even I say he can't box. He hasn't fought a real boxer yet. I'll stand by that. But I'll also stand by, I don't care who you are. He's a UFC. Tyron Woodley was a former UFC fighter. He knows how to take a punch. And for him to get knocked out with heavier gloves, with boxing gloves, I mean that does take skill. It does take power to knock somebody out.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. It takes power to knock somebody out. And I don't care who you are, the average Joe cannot knock somebody out.
And to kind of agree with you, and to kind of bring another point though, Jake Paul is heavier by nature than Woodley. They were not the same weight when in the ring at all. But the way he set Woodley up was skill. That's skill. The way you feint to the body, especially when you throw a body jab, and you're throwing a body jab, and if you're throwing it to the left side of the body, the left hand is going to come down a lot of times, especially when you're not trained to block with your elbows. And Tyron Woodley's a wrestler by nature. He's a wrestler by nature. So when you talk about habits creep in later in the fight. You know, when guys start to fight out, you know, their technique, their speed, their strength, that's all inclusive. But then when the little bit of heavy breathing comes in, or when the thought process has to start kicking in during the fight for the most part, well, then that's when guys tend to, how am I going to say this, they tend to lose. Well, they tend to, you know, they tend to expose a little bit more. To which, like Tyron Woodley, he's a guy whose habits got exposed during the course of the fight. And it was set up beautifully by Jake Paul. With that said, Jake Paul, he has done one thing also to me, sort of positive. He's revived the name of boxing. Maybe not the best way, I think, to be honest, but boxing, understand, boxing has taken major hits due to boxing promotion, but boxing is taking major hits to where people have tuned out. They tuned out. So Jake Paul is naturally going to be Dana White's enemy. It's just because you're dealing with two different revenue streams to a certain degree. So when he mixes and takes MMA fighters and knocks them out, Dana White doesn't like that at all, because it seems to lift boxing up to a certain degree. And not, you know, not as much MMA. They are competing venues, to be honest. I mean, now, you know, you can watch both. I watch both. But, they, you know, they're not, you know, they don't co-promote too much as far as that goes. Dana did it with Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor. But that was insane amounts of money that nobody would turn down. But he's not going to, like, when you're under contract with him, you're not going to keep doing that with his fighter, making, you know, taking that away from that revenue stream.
Okay. Z, what about Charlo wants to go to 165?
He could do it. I mean, as I said before, he's a tall guy, wide shoulder frame. I think he could easily make 165, 168. I mean, he's easily to me a super middleweight. I think a lot of his skills would transfer up there too. Just not sure. I mean, again, as I said before, against the top guys there, I'm not sure that, you know, I have to see how he performs at that weight against, you know, somebody who's not one of the top guys. But it's hard for me to, I mean, money in boxing, you know how boxing is. They want to, if the matchup is there, you know, and the money's there, then the fighters, they tend to want to be willing to fight each other. So it's very possible to see, you know, Charlo at 165, you know, fighting, you know, somebody. I don't know. I'm looking, maybe, you know, they've been talking about Canelo for a while. I wouldn't mind. I mean, that's very possible. You know, promotionally, that's beginning to be very possible. So.
Okay. All right, let me go to Ty. Ty, do you think we will ever see a Fury Dillian Whyte fight.
Well, I mean, the purse bid is in, and it's come in at 80% for Team Fury, 20% for Team Whyte. It always comes in favor of the champion. That's pretty significant a difference, even still. With that said, it really comes down to whether, you know, Dillian Whyte accepts the terms or not. Part of the issue for the fight was Team Fury felt Dillian Whyte was pricing himself out. So with the going to purse bid, it's just a matter of if Dillian Whyte. First of all, it depends on who has the highest bid. So if Top Rank and Frank Warren and Team Fury, put in a higher bid than DAZN and Eddie Hearn and Team Whyte, then they get to promote the fight. And if that's the case, I really don't think Dillian Whyte will take the fight. I think if Eddie Hearn puts in the winning bid to his Dillian Whyte's promoter, then Dillian Whyte may take the fight. But again, there's a big issue with the what he feels he is worth, that being Dillian Whyte. The other thing, too, is he was going to arbitration with the WBC, who was sanctioning the fight. So there are some issues going on behind the scene that could prevent Dillian Whyte from signing the contract. However, I think he's going to sign the contract because he's waited so many years for this shot. He's finally, when he got eliminated, got knocked out by Povetkin, so he's just come back into this position. So I think it'd be hard for him to turn it down because even 20% of a potential fight in the UK with Tyson Fury could still be a career-high purse for this guy. So we'll see, but that's what's going on with it right now.
I think he could go with he could go with the blueprint of gambling on himself to where, if he's confident enough, then he's going to take the lower purse bid, as you said, just to get the shot. Because if he gets the shot and you got the bet on yourself, you get the shot and win, it pays off for him. It's simple as that. But when you get the shot, sometimes you do want to get your worth, but at the same time, the opportunity could benefit you even more. So it depends.
That's the thing too, because remember, he was the number one ranked mandatory by the WBC for like 1,000 days while Deontay Wilder was the champion. And then when he finally got himself into a position for a final eliminator, he got sparked out by Povetkin. So he comes back, he beats Povetkin, wins a couple of fights. Now he's finally in position to where it's actually going to purse bid. Like, even though he's going to be thoroughly dissatisfied with the terms, I just think that he's at the point. Specifically, it's not that like Dillian Whyte's 25. You know, Dillian Whyte's like 33, 34 years old now, 32, 33 years old now. So he's at that point in his career where I think it behooves him to take the shot. Will he? I don't know, but I think he will, specifically if DAZN wins the promotional rights to it. Mm-hmm. But you just don't know. You just don't know.
Good. Z, what do you think?
Because the other thing real quick that has to be considered, too, is that if he doesn't take the shot, and Fury, Bob Arum's already said, and Frank Warren have already said, Fury's fighting March 26th or whatever against Dillian Whyte or whomever. So think this way. If Dillian Whyte doesn't take the shot and Fury fights, I don't know, let's say Otto Vailin again or somebody, and Fury wins, well, then we have the AJ Usyk rematch coming up, and say Usyk wins again. Well, then now the path's clear for their unification. So not only if Dillian Whyte doesn't sign this contract, it could be a couple of years before the belts are even in a position for him to get another shot. So, I mean, like, all that has to be considered.
Right. Okay. Was that an exclamation point here? Hey, Z, what do you think about Eubanks and Williams being off? Liam Williams' fight being off?
Oh, what, for COVID reasons?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, no. Inappropriate.
Z, what do you think about Canelo Alvarez versus Anthony Joshua or Tyson Fury? Which is the one that's going to sign the contract?
Nobody.
Nobody. Nobody. I understand. These guys have business amongst themselves at the heavier weight. They're like super heavyweights to a degree. It's Canelo, I mean, the most he's done, I think the most he's fought at was 173. And that was against Kovalev. It might have been around one, might not have been that much. But, so Canelo, he's a guy, 5'9" at the most. 5'8" and some change, to be honest. He has like a 67-inch reach. He's dealing with guys with 80-plus inch reaches. I mean, Canelo's not. I can imagine, I never would have thought that he had to move from like super welterweight to get title at light heavyweight, even welterweight. So, would he fight one of those guys? I seriously doubt it. Would he try to get a heavyweight title? That wouldn't surprise me. That wouldn't. He might try something the Roy Jones route. But to me right now, it seems Canelo is extremely comfortable at 168. Now maybe if the money provides, if something lines up, I think he might fight a light heavyweight. But I don't think he's even going to come on the scales at 175 light heavyweight match. I don't think I don't see him.
Eddie Reynoso, who is Canelo's trainer and manager, he like nixed that. He said that's just internet chatter because of what Canelo's accomplished. So he looks at it as flattery, but he also looks at it as absolutely ridiculous. First thing to consider is outside of Canelo is that Eddie Reynoso's high on the guy he has in his camp, Frank Sanchez, who just had another victory, he's undefeated, outboxed Efe Ogbah, who was considered a big-time prospect. And, so he has a guy who he knows is a skilled heavyweight who could be a difficult guy for just about, most guys on most nights. The other thing, too, is there was talk of if Usyk came to cruiserweight, would Canelo fight Usyk? And Eddie Reynoso said, no, Canelo wouldn't fight Usyk if Usyk came to cruiserweight. Usyk's too big. So, again, that's just, you get people talking and fans talking and they write articles, but that's not the reality of the situation. And Zito just told you in plain terms because of, the physicality of Canelo. Obviously, a great fighter can cherry pick a title at a higher weight. But right now, there is nothing on the table that interests Canelo or his management at heavyweight, or even at cruiserweight.
Okay.
The reason why they're taking a cruiserweight fight is because a great fighter can cherry pick a title at a higher weight, but they're not looking to defend a title up there or anything. So, nah.
Did anybody happen to see the Ortiz Martin fight?
Oh yeah,
it was something.
Oh yeah,
that gets knocked down.
I watched that.
Yeah, he gets knocked down twice and gets up and knocks him out. It's fixed.
So Luis Ortiz is officially Luis Old Tease. I love Luis Ortiz. But Luis Ortiz, his age is 42, but you have to remember that's a Cuban who defected late in his career, 42.
Right.
That 42 is like a woman's 25. You know what I mean? He's obviously older probably than 42. And he showed it. He absolutely showed it. A lot of people think he was his punch resistant, which a little bit of it was, but it was his reaction time and his legs. He was always kind of a slow plodder with deceptively quick hands. He's still the same guy, slow plodder, deceptively quick hands. But his legs just aren't sturdy underneath him. By me being a guy who's been in the gym as a guy well over 42, not well over 42, but as a guy in my 40s, I can tell you, and I know Zito could tell you, your legs just aren't stable under you anymore. And I know Bob could tell you, your legs just aren't as stable as they used to be. And it's just harder to maintain your balance. And with his reactions being a little slower and his legs, he looked 42 in there. However, he's a really good boxer, and he's probably one of the best technical boxers of this era at heavyweight, point blank. Not one of the best heavyweights per se, but one of the best technical fundamental boxers of this era. And Charles Martin, at his best, is an athletic guy with some power. He's learned some craft. And, you know, I got to give it to Charles Martin because I didn't think much of him. Coming off that Anthony Joshua fight, he looked horrible, obviously, and I never thought much of him. But he showed me some things in his build back up to this Ortiz fight. He showed me some grit, some toughness, and he showed me that he really studied and improved his craft. And I saw Charles Martin perform probably the best I've ever seen him perform. And at the same time, I saw Luis Ortiz perform as badly as I could see him perform. And then Luis Ortiz finally got there. And, you know, I told Zito, I said, he looked like he punched Charles Martin into reliving a previous conversation. And Charles Martin was out on his feet talking to somebody else. And Luis Ortiz hit him again, and Charles Martin looked at him like, "Yo, why you keep hitting me, man? I'm talking to this guy." Next thing you know, he's crumpled on the canvas. And I think it's a testament to how good Luis Ortiz actually was in his prime, which we probably really didn't see by the time he got known and came over here with everything right. He had going on.
Good.
Yeah, I think that.
Bob, what do you think? Go ahead, Z.
George Barney.
Go ahead, Z.
Oh, I was just going to say, I agree with Ty. I think that when you get older, your reflexes have something to do with your punch resistance, to be honest. Why? Because you're not eating the shot as sharp when your reflexes are good. When your reflexes start to go, you start to eat the shot sharper. The first shot that Ortiz went down with was on top of his head. And you could see, obviously, that his legs couldn't absorb it. Like, he himself absorbed it easily, but the shot and the power of the shot, when it went to his legs, usually a guy could, dip him down a little bit and come back up. But when you get older, you tend to want to sit down. And that's what happened. His legs sat him down. With that said, Martin, he's athletic. And he did learn craft. But he didn't learn a whole lot of discipline to a certain degree. He knocked him down twice, but he fell in love with knocking him down. He raised his hands. He acted like he think that was going to be the norm of the fight. And when you start looking at the fight, you start looking at what Ortiz started doing, he slowed his feet down. He slowed his feet down, but what he did, started moving his head.
Started countering to the body.
Exactly. Started countering to the body. Started hitting him hard to the body. And he started jabbing. His jab was tremendous. And when a guy is jabbing and moving his head, it gets a lot easier to get inside. A lot easier, believe me. I mean, so, and Martin, his discipline was he didn't see that coming. What he saw was that when I touch him, he reacts. And not all the time. You know, you could have touched him with something earlier to where he might not react to it later. He might be able to brace that muscle.
You know what, Vito? It's funny you said that. That same left that Martin knocked him down with in what was it, the second, first round?
Yeah, first.
The one that hit him on the top of his head?
Yep.
So I watched the fight live, and then I watched the knockout like 20 times, right? And then I watched the fight live again. And what I noticed is, and I thought I saw it when I watched it in the first viewing, but the left he knocked him down with, he knocked Ortiz down with the top of the head, the very first knockdown. He hit Ortiz with the same shot around the fourth or fifth round, same exact shot, same spot. Ortiz rose back up. It dipped him,
walking towards Charles Martin, and he banged his gloves. I don't know if you remember when he banged his gloves.
I remember that.
Yeah, when he tapped his gloves, he tapped his gloves together. He got hit with that same shot. And when he tapped his gloves, because for whatever reason, I always have a tendency to tap my – I used to tap my gloves a lot. And whenever I tap my gloves, it's like, you're not going to get that one again. And he tapped his gloves, you could see it in his face. But that speaks to what you said, Zito. That same shot that he couldn't absorb early, his legs didn't absorb early, once he warmed into the fight and warmed up and the adrenaline's flowing and the blood is nice and loose, he was able to his body was able to absorb it. That is a very good point, man, because I just noticed that the other day. I was like, oh, that's the same shot. I said, but he took it this time. He's warmed up. Yeah, good point, Zito.
Yeah, now, if Martin had discipline enough to kind of keep it long and keep him working and then drop the power in like that, it would be a little different because his feet are faster than Ortiz. He just didn't work out. Like, he just, I think he fell in love with the power and got caught up.
Hey, Bob, we got I got a question on Bellator that's coming up. They're going to move 274 is going to go to Dublin. I guess that's on the 25th of March. That's Masali against Biff. What's that, Kate?
Yeah, I didn't know they're going over there, but I know they have a huge fan base over there, so that's going to be huge. McGregor, you know, get some of his lower guys out on that card and whatnot, so that'll be a good show.
Yeah. Let me ask you another question on Bellator. It seems that Horace Gracie's his grandson is fighting. 274.
I didn't hear that. I'm not sure. Yeah, there's. I'm not sure if Toys. Their family is so extensive, and every once in a while you hear another one popping up here and there. Other than Hoist making the debut back in the original UFC, you know, and then they talked to others really well, but. You know, no disrespect to the Gracie family. I wish them the best, but I'm not, you know, overly impressed by any means.
How about you, Cade? What's your thoughts?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear. I was watching the Eagles game.
We're talking about Bellator.
Bellator?
Bellator
274. Bellator,
it's Gracie against
Carroll. I'm completely honest with you. I don't really know. I don't know. I don't know what's happening, Bellator.
Hey, how about Bob? How about Sergio? Wants to get back in action on UFC 272.
Who does?
Sergio.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time hearing you. What I want to bring up, though, is, you know, over when we've been gone, I haven't watched it or anything, but the upset of Juliana Pena over Amanda Nunes, that's
brilliant.
Something that was just amazingly needs to be talked about, that no one saw that coming, and I'm super proud of Pena for doing that. Amanda Nunes, super super champion. So that was a phenomenal fight. And I was kind of surprised at UFC 269 that Oliveira beat Poirier, but, wow, you know, good stuff. Poirier is an awesome athlete.
I remember the last interview we had with, Amanda, when we were talking about Amanda Nunes, I remember when I said, Amanda Nunes is pound for pound best female fighter on the planet. I want to retract my statement.
That's how you felt, and there's nothing wrong with that, right? First of all, the Amanda Nunes Julia Pena fight was quite possibly maybe one of the most exciting fights for me personally I've ever watched in my life. I was literally on the edge of my seat. screaming. I thought I was one of Juliana Panna's coaches. I was like, take her down, take her down. But let me say this. I don't care what the odds were. I don't care what anybody says, the scribes, the pundits, the fighters themselves. I'd say the biggest upset of all time in UFC history on that level is Matt Serra beating George St. Pierre. I completely disagree. Matt Serra always had a puncher's chance.
Yeah,
always
right.
had a puncher's chance. And he won with a punch. He always had. Matt Serra, to this day, hits harder than GSP. He always had a puncher's chance. Juliana Penna didn't have a puncher's chance. She didn't have a grappler's chance. She was literally the – did you see her striking? Like, it's, her striking is god-awful. I'm watching her win exchanges with Amanda Nunes. She either hit Amanda or she was punching straight up in the air. It was crazy. She's horrible at striking. However, she was completely outgunned. But what she wasn't was outlunged. She simply, Amanda Nunes, I mean, she literally just wore her out and broke her. She broke her spirit. Amanda Nunes said, you know what, we'll do this another day. You got this one. She broke her. She broke her because fatigue makes cowards out of everybody. And you know what she was able to do? Julia Penna, the one thing we knew about her coming in is, you know what, she's tough and she could grind. And she just pushed the pace that Amanda Nunes, I'm not going to say Amanda Nunes can handle, but it was Amanda Nunes' first cut at 125 in 2 years. She pushed the pace Amanda Nunes was not prepared to handle. And then Amanda Nunes, conversely, got in her own head. It was almost like she was offended that this girl was standing in front of her. And all she kept doing was throwing a jab and a big right hand. Wore herself out. Daniel Cormier, whether you like him or not, he was calling the fight perfect. He said Amanda Nunes is just throwing big punches. She's going to wear herself out. This is bad for the champ. This is bad. He was calling it as it was happening, and it happened. Man, I was screaming. I was like, take her down, chop her out.
Yeah.
The Oliveira fight was tremendous, right? But after the, like, the Nunes, that was it. You know what I mean? Like, that just kind of, it really clipped. You know what? It was the perfect way to end the year for a pay-per-view.
Definitely.
Yeah, she Amanda rope-a-doped herself. She literally
rope-a-doped herself.
I mean, and she rope-a-doped herself partially off of her own success. I mean, she landed a few shots, and then she went power crazy, and all Penna did was stand in there and make her kind of teach story that same set to the point to where what's the next one? Amanda sacrificed everything, leg kicks. She sacrificed actually her actual physicality. You're making a great threat. You should be putting your body on her to a certain degree. But Amanda,
you know that old axiom,
blast her out of there. And
you remember that old axiom that if you stand up to a bully, that they fall down. Remember that, how they say that? If you stand up to a bully, they back down. Like, no one says the axiom anymore. They just saw a picture of Penna and Nunes, because that's exactly what happened. Like, she stood up to her and she made her wilt. You know what I mean? That was just, wow.
Yeah.
Well, as soon as we hang up, I'm going to MMA Core and watch that fight again. Amazing.
Yeah, I'm going to have to watch that. I've said it before, though. I'd rather fight a great fighter with horrible wind than a decent fighter with great stamina. You know what I mean? Because it's going to go forever.
Clay Guida.
Oh, right, and he won last year, right,
yep,
at the end of the year.
Yep, Clay Guida, bro.
Oh,
I would say all the old guys. But, yeah, Clay Guida's got legendary stamina.
Clay,
Clay Guida is Hall of Fame. I don't care.
Hall of Fame.
He's, yeah, he's had a story. He's had a storied career.
Hey, Bob, what do you think of Caitlin Vieira decision over Miesha Tate?
I get it. Yeah, I see that. Miesha wasn't ready for that. You know, Misha's one of my favorites. You know, so you know this and that, and so I didn't want to see that loss. But I judging wise, yeah, she lost. There's no question.
Thanks, Caitlin. What do you think?
Caitlin Vieira.
Caitlin.
And Miesha Tate. So Miesha Tate's an old fighter. You know, she's definitely a veteran. She's definitely one of the pioneers. She's one of the pioneers for the entire female division, same as Holly Holm, Ronda Rousey. She came up with all those other amazing female fighters that are go down in history. But, I mean, Miesha Tate, it wasn't really a surprise to me because, again, she is getting older. Her stamina isn't as good as it was when she was in her prime. So when she fights these younger fighters, I'm not really surprised when an old fighter loses.
Okay. Ty, what do you think about Joseph Parker calling out Andy Ruiz for a rematch? Will that happen or not?
You know, I don't think it will happen, and just because of the whole promotional affiliation thing. I think for Joseph Parker, it's a smart move because of the financial benefits to it. But I don't think it's likely to happen at this point. A lot of people are calling out Andy Ruiz, as a matter of fact, it seems right now. And I think part of it is because, you know, he's looking to have this next fight. But Andy Ruiz, you know, his profile kind of you know, when he beat Joshua, his profile kind of exploded to a certain extent. But then at the same time, you know, he came back 932 pounds and lost a sloppy decision. So you got to look at it as, you know, from a business standpoint, you're managing a boxer. Andy Ruiz is a guy who brings money to the table, but also who looks like he has some vulnerability. So, yeah, that's why a lot of people are calling him out. Plus, he has a pretty high ranking, too. So.
So we got to do one of our sponsors here. BioSolar, that's BYOSOLAR. They're a company that sells panels, solar panels, and you put them on your house with no money down. They'll cut your electric bill by at least 25% permanently, and they come in all different colors. If you have interest in it, give them a call at 727-314-6976. Ask for Patrick. And once again, we appreciate his help. He's also said that if you mention the Fighting Words Radio Network, that he'll throw in a $200 bonus for you. So that's 727-314-6976.
All right. Here's the big one. I just happened to see him Tuesday. Mr. Keith Thurman is coming back on the 5th of February against Brandon Berrios. Z, you want to talk about that one?
This is a good test for Keith. It's a good test for Keith. Berrios isn't a pushover, but Berrios is also moving up. What I want to say I imagine he's going to go rounds against Berrios, but eventually stop Berrios. If I'm correct, Berrios got knocked out by Javante Davis. Javante, he was losing to me before that power caught up to Berrios. I don't imagine Keith be losing, but I see Keith going round. Berrios is a good fighter. He's a good fighter, and I mean he's moving up, but still, I imagine Keith will have to go around. Keith is coming off a layoff. You have to work some kinks out. So, but I think it is a fight, and Keith is a natural welterweight, and I think he might eventually get the barrier. If not, I can see Keith winning a clear decision. I mean, he's gonna be,
I guess, this is another one of those fights where it's like you see a veteran fighting, you know, a younger guy, and I like Keith. I've always liked Keith. I think he's still a great fighter. He still has great power. But again, it's all those, it's his knees and his elbows, they're all given out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and someone like Berrios,
yeah,
who can go round for round with somebody, especially some of the greatest boxers right now that we have right now, Gervonta Davis. You know, he got knocked out by Gervonta, but he still went, you know, he still put up a fight until that point. So I like Thurman, but I don't think he's going to – I don't see him coming out on top in this fight. I don't see him winning this fight.
You know, Kane echoed everything I was thinking until his prediction. I don't necessarily think Keith is going to lose. I think he's going to win. And he's – let's just be honest. Mario Barrios is brought in for Keith to beat. And I think this is a good comeback fight for Keith because Barrios did go rounds with Tank, and he was beating Tank. In fact, I thought he was beating Tank up until the time of the stoppage. So that's why I agree with everything Caden said. And the first thing I think about when I think about Keith right now is, will his body first and foremost be able to handle training camp and get him to the ring healthy? Because that's first and foremost. Can he make it to the ring healthy? And then if he makes it to the ring healthy, can he make it through the fight healthy? Then if he makes it through the fight healthy, is he healthy after the fight? So those are the three things I worry about. I think if the first two happen, he makes it to the ring healthy, and he makes it through the fight healthy, then I think he beats Berrios. I think he should beat Berrios. But that's part of the reason why he's fighting Berrios, because Berrios is going to let us know where Keith is at this point in time. If, as Zito and I think, that Keith defeats Berrios, then depending how he defeats Berrios, Keith will know where he's at, and the audience will know where he's at. If, as Katie predicts, Keith loses to Berrios or loses because he doesn't get through the fight physically, then I think that also says a lot about where Keith is at. So I think this is a very good fight. It's a fight he should win, but kind of like Caden, I have my concerns, first and foremost, that he physically is able to do this.
Okay. Jesse Vargas versus Liam Smith on February 5th. What's your thoughts?
I don't know too much about Lance Marcos, but Jesse Vargas, he's always been kind of a B fighter to a certain degree fighting, and he gets some A-list fights. One thing is, he's getting up there. Jesse Vargas isn't young anymore. He's been through some experience, but he isn't young anymore. And I don't know what level he's at right now. You kind of don't know what level Jesse Vargas is at most of the times. But now he's getting to the old, I definitely don't know where he's at right now. So this could be an interesting fight.
Hey, Butch, what Liam is he fighting, did you say? Is it Liam Williams or Liam Smith?
Liam Smith.
Liam Smith?
Yes.
Junior, super welterweight?
So Zito, let me say this. Ooh. Liam Smith is Callum's brother. Liam Smith is.
Yeah. Okay, that's Liam Smith.
Yeah, I don't know if Jesse Vargas is going to beat Liam Smith.
I don't, being honest with you.
Yeah, I don't favor him.
Not at once. I mean, I know he's moving up to 154. He hasn't been terribly active. Liam Smith has been more active. I don't favor Jesse Vargas in that fight. Liam Smith is getting a little long in the tooth, but Jesse Vargas is not exactly short in the tooth either. I don't favor Jesse Vargas over Liam Williams. I'm kind of curious to see that fight because I know Jesse Vargas is looking to run the politics, so I'm curious as to what his focus is. But I got to make sure it's who I think. If Liam Smith or Liam Williams, I would favor either one of those guys to beat Jesse Vargas. So there it is. But, yeah, it's Liam Smith. It just depends on how much you guys left. But if him and Jesse Vargas are comparable, so Liam Smith should beat Jesse Vargas. Point blank. That's what I think. Yeah.
Said everything already.
All right, guys. Well, we've come to the end of my script, and we've extended ourselves by 20 minutes. So I appreciate your indulgence for letting me do that. It's been a great show. I want to thank everybody, Bob, Katie, Zeke, Ty. Thank you all for everything you do for the show. Bobby, you want to lead us out?
Yeah, guys, Happy New Year. God bless everybody, all of our fans, all of our team. So good to have everyone back. Sorry, I kind of zoned out of the fight game for a couple of weeks. Family took precedence. My daughter was in from college and took her skydiving, learn life, that kind of stuff. So everyone, take a step, jump out, have some faith. God bless. Have a great week.
Thanks, bud. Zeke.
Yeah, another wonderful show. I want to thank Bob, KM, you, Butch, and Ty. I want to thank all my Fighting Words family. These shows are definitely dedicated to Bob, Coach Mel, and Dr. Chris. If anyone wants to hear any Fighting Words, please do call.
Okay, Katie.
I think everybody did an amazing job tonight. It was a good 3-week layoff, but we came back, and I think we had an amazing show. It's another one to add to the list. I think everybody did an amazing job. I can't wait to come back next Saturday.
Great. Ty?
Hey, it was great being back on with everybody. Sans Tony, we miss you, bro. Happy New Year to everyone. I hope everyone's safe. Glad we all made it back safely as well. Bob is our co-pilot. Coach Mel keeps watching over us. Dr. Chris keeps us laughing. Everyone enjoy their week.
Thank you very much, everybody. I appreciate all your help in getting this thing together and getting this program done. Ladies and gentlemen, this program is brought to each and every night. We have a great appreciation. The men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women of Police and Fire Services, the doctors, the nurses, and everybody on the first line of COVID, please wear your mask, keep your distance, and wash your hands. This is getting to be a very dangerous situation. We have 76,000 people a day being tested, and many of those coming up positive. So please, we don't need to lose any chance. We love you all. These programs are also dedicated to those who lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcat, Sergeant Thomas Bainier, Trophy Jeffrey Esmonds, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childress, San Diego Officer Mike Kevler, Sergeant Tom Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Charlie Condit, Carpenter Springs Police Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant James O'Connor, Philadelphia Police Department, Sergeant Charlie Levick, Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department, Patrolman Arthur Crispin, Lakeland PD, Lieutenant Joe Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Artis Hook, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Plikas, Wilmington Fire Department, Trooper Joe Bullock, Florida Highland Patrol, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highland Patrol, Chief Al Hovel, Longmont Police Department, and Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department. My brothers and sisters, you may be 10-7 at this point in time, and sometime we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields. The sunshine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the palm of his hand. Thank you. Good night. Have a great one.
Shem Aleich Ma Yilama Shem Ahezach Yilama Son Hashem Nevorat Fet Hakuig Again Ma Yilama Shem Aleich Ma Yilama fiery blade engaged to lead, he'd break the bravest in the spirit and with mind aflame, saw Hashem's strength and length of days. Shem Aleich Ma Yilama, Shem Aleich Yilama, Shom Hashem Yevorah
Dispatch in 1999. County dispatched in 1999. County dispatched in 1999. Calling units, be advised, 1999 is responding to his last emergency. And God rest his soul. Good night, Bob. We love you and miss you.